What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire. I'm your host, Cam, back for another episode, and Mason is back for another episode. How's it going?
Good, dude. Look at us. 2 weeks in a row.
Hey, it's almost as if football season is basically here. NFL preseason started with the stupid Hall of Fame game. I know you couldn't miss the matchup of Kellen Mond and Zach Wilson, quarterback duel last week.
I gave it a solid three possessions, and that was it. Then I tapped out after that.
hey, you did better than me. I didn't even watch any of it.
It was one of those things where I was like, I've got nothing else to watch tonight, so let's just throw it on. Why not?
Well, thank God that isn't ever what the quarterback, you know, play really looks like in the NFL, unless something really bad happens, obviously.
Yeah.
It's like the XFL, but against even better players that they're playing against defense. It's horrible. Anyway, so that's happening. But yeah, man, so coach's poll just came out recently, which is just another sign that the season is on its way. I think there are no surprises on who got ranked at the top on this, Mason. We'll just kind of go through it real quick. Obviously, you're listening on podcast, but you can pull it up if not, or just listen real quick. So number one, obviously, is Georgia. They got 61 first place votes. They missed out on 5 total first place votes in the coaches poll. So they're number one, followed by Michigan at 2. Then you have Alabama at 3 with 4 first place votes. Ohio State at number 4, and they received the last first place vote. So they're at 4. And then rounding out the top 5 is LSU at number 5. Number 6 is USC, followed by Penn State at 7. Florida State at 8. Clemson at 9. Tennessee rounds out the top 10. And then Washington's at 11, pretty high up for Washington there. They're the second highest Pac-12 team, which I found kind of interesting, actually. Texas at number 12. Then you got Notre Dame and then Utah and Oregon. It starts getting kind of bunched up here with your Pac-12 and Big 12 teams here. Utah at 14, Oregon at 15. Then we have the runners-up last year in TCU at 16, followed by Kansas State, the defending Big 12 champions. I know that can trip some people up. Oh, TCU went to the playoff, but they didn't actually win their conference. Kansas State won the conference, and they're at 17 this year, followed by Oregon State, which had a really sneaky, like, nobody talking about 10-win season last year. They're at 18 this year. Oklahoma at 19. After a pitiful year last year, North Carolina at 20, Wisconsin at 21, then Ole Miss, Tulane, the sole group of 5 school in the top 25, landing at 23, then finishing out with Texas Tech and somehow the Texas A&M Aggies at 25. Somehow. They're there. So that's your top 25 in the coaches. Some other kind of teams of note that just missed the cut of the top 25. Iowa would be team number 26 if it kept going down. Iowa had the next round of votes, then followed by South Carolina, and somehow Florida was there. I don't know why, but those are your bottom 3 out of the poll there. So that's the coaches poll, Mason. Any kind of quick thoughts on the coaches poll?
So I got 2 really quick ones. Texas being at 12 kind of surprised me a little bit. I figured they would be higher. I kind of thought they would be top 10 this year because I'm actually pretty high on Texas right now. I think Quinn Ewers is going to have a great year.
Wait, what did you say?
Pretty high on Texas this year.
Wow.
Hey, look, I'm planting my flag on Texas. You can't have them. Back off.
Listen, I am the one that's had them for the past like 3 years. Mason, okay, you're hopping on my bandwagon. Look, it's not the other way around.
Stark's my guy. Get that out of here. But yeah, like with Quinn Ewers and Xavier Worthy, I kind of figured they would be a little bit higher. I get it when you lose a guy like Bijan, and also you lose his backup, Roshan Johnson. But I mean, look, like it's what, year 3 or year 4 for Sark at this point. You have a really good quarterback under his belt. I mean, like now's the time for him to start popping off, and so I kind of figured they would be top 10, so I'm a little surprised they're at 12. My second big one is that we have five teams from the Pac-12 in the top 25 right now, and they're about to die.
So, RIP, dude. Yeah. Listen, it might as well be the best year as the last year for the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
They're going to be like the Big 12 was last year. Like, they're just going to beat each other up and maybe get lucky, have one of them fall into the playoff like TCU did last year. It's going to be that kind of season, which means you better stay up late and watch some Pac-12 late night football, because it's I think it's going to be really an eternity. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But yeah, man, like, honestly, to me, it's going to be really hard for them to get a team into the playoffs just because, like, they're just going to feast on each other at this point, man. Like, they have – they're so deep right now at quarterback especially. It's just going to be really hard for them to get a team in. And also, like, when you look at USC, they have a lot of holes in their team right now. Like, Lincoln Riley has never had a good defense. Even at Oklahoma, his defenses were terrible. And then he drug it over to his first year at USC. Their defense was awful last year. So they're probably – I would say USC is probably the favorite to come out. But if you told me they had two losses this year, wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely does feel like it's going to be one of those seasons for the Pac-12 that they're definitely going to cannibalize themselves in conference play, which just means that it's going to be entertaining football, which is a win for us, but a downer for the Pac-12 not being able to get a playoff team since Washington, since like the first one?
Yeah, or I think it was Washington.
Oregon? One of the two was no, the last ones.
I think it was Washington, because Oregon was in the first one, and then because they ended up playing a championship against Ohio State.
Ohio State, yep.
Yeah, and then Washington lost to Bama. I want to say it was 2 years after that, maybe. Maybe it was.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's either it's a year a or 2 years. Yeah, it's been a long while for sure. But yeah, so Washington being the last one to make it to the playoff, and it might be the only. Are not the only, but the last Pac-12 team to ever make a playoff, because they're about to die. So, yeah, that's the coaches poll. And so with the coaches poll coming out, Mason, we are debuting the Down to the Wire poll, which, if you listen last year, is a poll that Mason and I are creating. Both of us put in our own top 25, and we will add in any listener who gives us a top 10, top 25, top 15, whatever you can muster up in your own rankings. If you email that over to us at downtothewirecm@gmail.com, we'll include you in that poll, but we're also including the coaches poll as well in our polls, and then whenever the AP comes out, that'll be included as well. But we have a preseason poll out now, so here's your first look at the preseason poll for us. At number one, we have agreement with the coaches poll at Georgia being number one. They have two first place votes out of three. Just below them is Michigan at number two, and they received the other first place vote for us. At number three, we have Alabama. At number four, we have LSU. At number five, we have Ohio State. So the top five, the grouping of teams is the same for us as the coaches. It's just the ordering is a little bit different for us. So we have Ohio State at five instead of four. So it's just a swap between Ohio State and LSU in our poll and the coaches poll. At number six, we have Penn State. At number seven, we have USC. At number eight, we have Florida State. And we actually have Texas at nine in our poll. We both of us had Texas way higher than the coaches poll, and so that bumped them up for us in our poll. They're at nine. We have Tennessee. And Clemson actually are tied for 10th. So there's a tie for 10th place there in the votes and how that worked out. At number 12, we have Washington. We have a group of three here of Pac-12 teams that are grouped up here. So 12 is Washington, 13 is Utah, and 14 is Oregon. Again, as we just talked about, just kind of a clump of Big 12 or Pac-12 teams that are going to be battling out this year. So it'd be super, super fun. At number 15, we have Notre Dame, which is a couple of spots lower than what the coaches had it. So we have them going down to 15. At number 16, we have Kansas State, the returning Big 12 champs. At number 17, we have Oregon State, another Pac-12 team. At number 18, we have the runners-up in TCU. At 19, we have North Carolina. At 20, we have Ole Miss. Oklahoma at 21. Tulane, your favorite, at 22. Texas A&M at 23, Wisconsin and Texas Tech both tie at 24. Some other teams that received votes but didn't quite make the cut for us is South Carolina was one. Oh, what was another one? Let me actually pull that up.
UCLA
got one, and Iowa got one as well. So those are the three teams that got some votes but did not crack the top 25 for us there. So thoughts on our poll, Mason?
Yeah, like you said, Texas cracking the top 10 for us. I like that for our rankings. I know you're going to hate on me, but I put Texas A&M at 20. We both hate Jimbo, but look, I can't deny Texas A&M has potential to have a pretty solid year this year. The other one for me is you put Iowa at 24, I believe. I just could not allow Iowa to sniff the top 25 for me after the pitiful performance that they put on last year on offense. So I just couldn't do that one. But yeah, I mean, I think we got a solid poll.
So I was the defector at number one. I put Michigan at one for me. So I'm surprised you didn't say anything about that one.
Honestly, like, I don't hate it. To me, it was really hard to bump Georgia off of that number one spot. But I see where you're going with Michigan because, I mean, let's be real. Like, you have Blake Corum coming back. You have J.J. McCarthy coming back. Like, they're going to be solid on defense. So there's no reason for Michigan not to have a really good year this year, especially because their schedule is always weak. So their big game is always Ohio State, and if they pull that off, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's that. And listen, a lot of times these preseason polls bring over the baggage of last year, which, I mean, if you really kind of think of preseason polls, it's really not supposed to, like, carry much weight of what, I mean, it's supposed to carry a little bit of weight of what happened last year, but at the same time, you're still trying to look at it from like a new lens, you know? So it's really kind of a weird balancing act on how to rank these teams. Cause a lot of times, you know, you'll have one argument and one reasoning for one team being over another, and then you completely change for the next grouping of teams down below. So it's really hard to kind of stay consistent. For me, when it came to either Georgia or Michigan at one, the thing that I came back to me was quarterback. Michigan has a returning quarterback that's really solid, and Georgia doesn't have a returning quarterback, first year starter, along with a new offensive coordinator. And you're going to be breaking down the Bulldogs later on here on the podcast. But that was really, to me, the deciding factor on why I put Michigan at one instead of Georgia. But I can absolutely understand the case for Georgia being at one. I mean, they're the two-time defending national champions. They're still loaded on defense. Kirby Smart has proven that he's one of, if not the best coach in the country at this point. So it's really kind of hard to deny him that. But personally, I just decided Michigan at one, and obviously that is very easily changed after week one. Neither team really plays any tough competition until at least October. So you really won't know what happens between these two until later on in the season. But that was that. And then another thing for me. So, like, okay, I understand your reasoning. Maybe you're not putting Iowa in the top 25 because of their offense. But that's kind of the same reason why I didn't put A&M in my top 25 at all. The only reason they are in this top 25 poll is because of Mason putting them up at 20. I didn't have them ranked at all. And so the only reason they got in was because of Mason and the coaches poll here. Them going 5-7 last year and having all the question marks that we talked about last week, and even us having the discussion of thinking Jimbo's going to get fired midway through the year, I don't see any reason, if that's the discussion, that they're a top 25 team. So
look, I, you know, I don't really have much to say to defend myself on that one. So.
You're buying the Kool-Aid, Mason. I don't appreciate it.
And all then, it took was 1 week.
All it took for you was for you to sleep on it. That's all it took. Oh man. Okay. So again, guys, like I said, you are like, we want, if there's any way for you to get involved in the show with us, it's going to be the poll. So go ahead and send us what your top 25 is for after week one. Obviously, the preseason poll is already done. The next poll will not come out until after the first week of games. And so between the time of the end of Sunday or Monday, get us your top 25 since games in week one last until Monday night. Go ahead and give us your top 25, top 10, whatever you can actually get us. Send that and email that to us so we can include you in the next poll. And again, this is going to be weekly. So after Saturdays, every Saturday, every Sunday, give us your polls and we'll get it all up. And then we'll post it on social media as well as of course, talking about it on the podcast. So if you don't follow us on social media, it's all linked, I believe, on Spotify. And we'll go over those here at the end of the show on how you can follow us and keep up with us on Twitter and or X, whatever you want to call it. I'm calling it Twitter. I don't care what Elon says.
Get that X crap out of here.
I don't care what Elon says. It's always going to be called Twitter in my heart. On Twitter, on Facebook and Instagram. And hey, maybe soon YouTube. So keep an eye out on that or Rumble. So, or both. Why not both? Okay. So that's the polls. And Mason, you know, it's like we're like psychic or something and talking about this expansion stuff last week. And then in that discussion, we were saying, yeah, they're probably going to have to come back to the table and figure out this playoff stuff with a Power Five conference going in the dumpster. And lo and behold, there have been plenty of conversations that have arisen that's like, yeah, they need to like start re-talking about that. And even Greg Sankey alluded to that today in his interview with Feinbaum today. Like, it's almost as if we know what we're talking about.
Look, we're kind of okay at this. That gave me a little bit of confidence. That boosted me up a little bit. We started talking about it, and then boom, it happened. Look at us. Look, it's just a little pat on the back for us.
Little pat on the back. So, yeah, you should listen to this. But, yeah, I mean, so official, it happened with Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah joining the Big 12, and Oregon and Washington joining the Big 10. It was pretty much all a formality while we were talking about this, you know, but it just felt weird because it was, like, literally, like, the next day. It's like news after news every single hour, every other hour. And you and I are basically like texting screenshots of tweets throughout the day. It's like, what is going on? Like, this is happening so fast. We go from, oh, the Pac-12 people are ready to maybe sign their rights over to the conference to sign a deal. And then the next hour is like, oh, nope, psych. Arizona State's going to leave and Arizona's going to leave. Not really sure what's going on. Oh, it's official that Oregon and Washington are leaving the Big Ten. Oh, and now it's official that it's like every other hour, dude. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay, that was so much fun. I had a blast because it was just like constant news. Pete Thamel was popping up on my timeline every single second of the day. But yeah, man, like when it was happening or when we were talking about it right before it, I honestly didn't expect it to happen for probably another couple weeks. And then boom, it was like next day, everything's happening. The Pac-12 is just dead at this point. And I don't know where we go from here, man. Like, you know, we talked about how the Pac-12 was dying a lot last week. So I don't think we need to go too deep into that. But like at this point, I don't know where we're headed, man. And I honestly really don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely beat a dead horse when it came to what the Pac-12 is. I mean, like, it's dead. I mean, there's no saving it. I don't care if they do some sort of merger thing with the Mountain West and try and keep the name of the Pac-12. It doesn't matter. It's dead. And then the conversation kind of shifted during that day to Florida State because they've been making a big hoopla on wanting to leave the ACC. We even got a comment on one of our Facebook posts from a listener that was like, hey, what do you think about Florida State leaving the ACC and should they go to the SEC and all this stuff? And honestly, there's two things to that. One, for selfish reasons, they don't need to move. They need to stay in the ACC because I don't want it to become two mega conferences and then it just branch off and become its own thing like the NFL. We need to stay as far away from that as possible. On the Florida State side of things, you also need to stay. Listen, I get that you aren't making nearly as much money as the ACC and the Big 10 and even the Big 12 when it comes to your revenue. Your conference didn't sign the greatest deal. They signed a 20-year long deal with ESPN, which is very foolish because all the other conferences are signing short term, like 5 to 7 year contracts. So you're locked in until like 2036 or 2037 in your current deal. So like, I get you're upset with that, but at the same time, you're in a weak conference right now when it comes to football. and you're just now becoming relevant again. You haven't been relevant in 10 years since Jameis and them won the national championship and then the year following getting at least to the playoff, and you haven't been relevant since. It's been Clemson running the show. If you go the Big Ten and the SEC, when it comes just to a competition standpoint, as at this point, you're just going to get blown out of the water. That's just what's going to happen. And, you know, I get that Florida State is on the rise. They're being a trendy dark horse pick for the playoff this year, and all this kind of talk that's happening about them, which is good for them. That's what we need. It's good for college football. But, hey, how about you run your conference first? And stay there. And you know what? This is what the ACC needs to do to be able to at least be able to go to ESPN to renegotiate. They need to go and they need to sign Notre Dame. Notre Dame's already in the ACC for other sports. It's time that Notre Dame gets on board with the ACC because they have a deal with the ACC that if they were to join a conference, it's the ACC. So yeah, they already have their foot in the door there. It's time that they close it. They need to get Notre Dame to come. And with that, they would also need another team to come to bump up their conference to an even number to be a fourth 16-team conference. That's what needs to happen. You need to add strength to your conference and also be able to then renegotiate a little bit to get more money for your teams and for your programs. That's what needs to happen. Is it likely to happen? Probably not, because Notre Dame is Notre Dame and they want to be an independent. They have their own deal with NBC. But if you're the ACC, man, like, you have to do everything in your power to get that. There's talks of them maybe trying to go and get Cal and Stanford. That makes no sense whatsoever. Or maybe try and get SMU to join, which doesn't really make much sense at all either. To me, if I were to rule the ACC and whatever I said is what happened, what I would do is I would go and poach West Virginia from the Big 12, and I would take Notre Dame. That's what I would do.
All that feels like a pipe dream, if we're being honest.
For sure is a pipe dream. I think it for sure is definitely a pipe dream. If I had my way, that's what would happen. And the reason why I say West Virginia is because it makes sense geographically for them to be in the ACC instead of the Big 12. And plus, you would then finally get your rivalry back of West Virginia and Pitt. I mean, that's just a rivalry that was lost when the Big East blew up. So that's what makes sense. Now, can they poach those two teams? Probably not. I mean, I think you have a better chance of poaching Notre Dame than you do West Virginia, for sure. That just goes to tell you how almost impossible it is that either one of those things happen. But, if it's not those two, man, like, does the needle move at all for ESPN to want to renegotiate their contract if they get, like, a UConn and an SMU? It doesn't. So, I mean, if you're going to expand, like, it's got to mean something. And I don't think those two teams mean anything. And I don't know where else you would go.
So I'm glad you said what you said about Florida State, because I was feeling the same way, that if they did join the SEC, like, you're middle of the road at that point. It's just like adding another Auburn. Like, Florida State might contend every now and then, but you're not going to be one of the big dogs. And for being honest with each other, I don't see that out of any team coming out of the ACC. Like, I think if you give Clemson an SEC schedule, they're not going to be the same dominant team that they have been for the past few years, because honestly, their schedule has always been weak because it's the ACC. So I want to run an idea by you.
Okay.
So we've been hearing the talk about the two mega conferences. I think there is a chance that is inevitable, that the ACC and the Big 12 are going to kind of split, and then both end up the SEC and the Big 10 are going to kind of pluck from there. I'm almost wondering if it would be better if you're the ACC and you're the Big 12 and you kind of combined a little bit. So my guess is that the SEC is going to try and come in, and they're going to try and take Duke. They're going to try and take North Carolina. They'll probably try and take somebody like Virginia, and then maybe try and snag Florida State also. At that point, you're looking at the Big 12. You have Arizona State, Baylor, BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, Colorado, Houston, Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, Utah, West Virginia. That's not a bad conference, man. Like, they have rebuilt very, very well. So I think if you're doing that, if you can add somebody like Miami or maybe convince Clemson to come over too, like, at that point, you're a solid conference. So I think if we could get away from the two mega conference deal and try and nudge the Big 12 up a little bit more, we'll be in a little bit better shape than just having two mega conferences. Because at that point, like, we're already losing, like, some of the rivalries that we did have at that time, because we're not going to get Oregon, Oregon State anymore. That's going to be dead. And so, like, I don't know, man. I think if we just go to two conferences that at this point, it's not going to feel quite as much as college football. It's going to feel more like NFL. So I would love it if we could kind of nudge away for us to go to three conferences instead of just two mega conferences.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And if there is any, I mean, obviously, I think at some point the two mega conferences are kind of like what you said, inevitable. What I will kind of, I do kind of want to step back on that is I think, I mean, there was obviously a ton of pushback when the news broke last week of all these teams leaving. There was a ton of pushback on social media. There was even a ton of pushback from your talking heads from ESPN and Fox and all these podcasts and everything of not liking what's happening to college football in the landscape and losing the regionality. Like, that was a big thing. And I think with that, might be a little bit of concern from a lot of these presidents and commissioners being like, okay, maybe we need to step back and we don't want to lose our people, like what happened in NASCAR and what happened in the WWE. Like, it might be a while. Like, I think it's going to be a lot longer for the next expansion period than it was last time. I mean, last time, what was it, like 10 years ago, 12 years ago was the last expansion with A&M and Missouri and Nebraska and Colorado, yeah, and all those teams and Utah. So I think it's going to be a bit longer from that. So I think we're going to be kind of set where we're at. Any team in the ACC is stuck. They can't go anywhere unless half the conference decides to blow it up, which is not going to happen. So Florida State, sorry about it. You're stuck where you're at. And so what you need to do, instead of kicking your feet and crying about wanting to leave, is do everything in your power to push Notre Dame to join the conference.
Okay, the craziest thing that came out about that is Florida State thinking about going independent. Really, 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 Florida State. I mean, come on. Like, what kind of brand do you think you have at that point? Florida State's fun. They have a good atmosphere. They have a good tradition, I guess, if you want to say that. But independent, really. Like, what are we doing at that point? That's when the Saudis are coming in. Conspiracy.
Yeah,
it's, my conspiracy mind was rolling.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And kind of going back to the SEC expansion talk, Greg Sankey was on the Paul Feinbaum show today and was talking stuff. And so here's a couple of tweets that I got from Ross Dellinger from that interview that I wanted to read real quick. The first one says SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on with Paul Feinbaum says of the SEC, and quote, "We are in an enormously healthy place and not in the middle of movement efforts." That's number one. In tweet number two, Greg Sankey says SEC presidents met and talked last Friday. It is, quote, "very clear that there is not something out there," end quote, to engage with about expansion, he says. So he pretty much ends talk there of the SEC expanding, which I am completely fine with. We're done with expansion. Let's stop it now and get the extinguisher and extinguish the flames. We're not doing this anymore. We're done. Okay. So the Big Ten, just stop. Big 12, chill out. You're good where you're at. And let's just, like, move forward from here. ACC, just get Notre Dame and somebody else to join your conference. And we'll all be fine. Okay. We'll be fine.
Look, all hail Sankey. The dude knows what he's doing. I love it, though. He's been a great commissioner since joining the SEC. But Yeah, get that crap out of here, man. I'm so sick of all this. But
and he had
I guess I guess that's something to talk about.
He had a fun zinger here that I need to read you real quick on, that he had. He says, on Feinbaum, the SEC, quote, doesn't need to be in four time zones to generate interest on the West Coast or really across the globe, end quote. We don't need to be in four time zones to have eyeballs, man. We're the SEC. Like, what?
I mean, look, he's not wrong, if we're being honest.
Shots fired at the Big Ten, dude.
Also, if you think about it at this point, like, they've got a lot of the big markets covered. Birmingham, surprisingly, is one of the biggest markets when it comes to college football. The numbers out here are crazy. You also have Florida pretty much covered. You're getting Texas covered now. Like, at this point, it's just kind of like we're like you said, we don't need to expand. We're good. We're chilling at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to schools with big, normal TV markets, I mean, we have Atlanta locked down. We have South Carolina locked down. We have Gainesville, Orlando area-ish. Orlando-ish knocked down. And then, like you said, Birmingham. We have Mississippi pretty much all done. New Orleans, Houston, Austin. And now we add in... Oklahoma, where are they? What's it? Norman. We have Norman, which probably then rolls into Oklahoma City. We have probably around St. Louis with Missouri. We have Fayetteville and Little Rock in Arkansas. We have Nash Vegas, Lexington, which is right next to Louisville. I mean, Knoxville. I mean, anywhere in the, yeah, like, we're locked in. I mean, the only markets in the Southeast, if you can really consider these schools in the Southeast, are the market of North Carolina and Charlotte, and then Virginia around the DC market area. And those are the only reasons why the SEC would even consider adding a Duke, North Carolina, or Virginia, was just for market, TV markets, which I don't know if that matters as much anymore with how the TV landscape really works, but. We like you said, like we have the Southeast locked down, and because our teams and programs and brands are so strong, people on the West Coast that watch college football are watching us anyways. We don't need to add teams in the mountain time zone and the Pacific time zone. They're gonna watch us either way.
All right, so I know we're both sick of this, but of course the thought just popped in my head. So if the SEC is gonna add two more teams, let's just say if, would you go Virginia and like Clemson, or do you go Duke, North Carolina?
I'd probably go Duke, North Carolina.
Okay, good. Yeah, me too.
I don't think there's any way that South Carolina lets Clemson in.
No, I was just thinking that. No shot. And the argument could be made that if you go back 10 years and reverse it and say Texas joins before Texas A&M, I think there's 0% chance that Texas A&M enters the SEC at this time. That Texas,
no, for sure.
Because Texas, no shot they allow that. But I think it would be the same thing. No shot Clemson. I don't think Clemson would have much of a chance to get in just because South Carolina would pitch such a fit over that. But that's why I think Duke and North Carolina would be the better options, because then you're adding to the other sports, not just football, where if you're adding Clemson, let's be real, it's only football out there. But like with North Carolina, sometimes they're good at football, sometimes they're not. But like, if you're adding Duke and North Carolina for basketball purposes, good Lord.
Yeah, and they're pretty decent at baseball too. So let's throw in that college baseball. I know that you love it.
Oh, my favorite.
It's your favorite sport.
I watched three whole innings last year.
Three whole innings. And, you know, we were talking about how kind of to start off this segment of, oh, yeah, you know, they're talking about needing to come back to the table and talking about the playoff. Greg Sankey had a quote on this as well from earlier today. Greg Sankey, this is from Ross Dellinger. Greg Sankey on Feinbaum says CFP leaders have not met yet about reexamining the expanded playoff format. But, quote, it's wise for us to take a step back and reconsider what the format might look like given these changing circumstances, end quote. And then he has a follow-up tweet to that. He says, as Yahoo Sports reported last week, several CFP commissioners have suggested privately that the format and then rev distribution model needs to be re-examined if FBS drops from 9 to 10 conferences. Suggestions have ranged from a 5 automatic qualifier to 7 at large format to best of 12 and down even to best of 8, Mason. Best of 8. Let's there get back down Look to that, guys. Let's do it.
That's what I like to hear. So I don't know. Was the thought process that they were gonna, that they might go to 4 automatic bids?
In the tweet that Ross did, he said 5 automatics.
5. Okay.
So it would basically be your power 4 and then one G,
other
whatever it is, G5 or G4 or whatever it becomes.
Yeah.
Which I'm still not the biggest fan of, but
yeah. Well, look, just get us to 8, please. That's all we ask.
Just go down to 8. Okay. Well, I think we've beaten the horse, and hopefully this is the last time we have to talk about this realignment stuff and nothing else happens between now and next week, Mason. If something happens, then we might be in full meltdown mode in the next podcast. But let's go ahead and let's move on to our SEC East preview for this week. Last week we did the West, so if you haven't listened to that, go ahead and check the episode from last week to get our full preview on all things SEC West Division. So we're going to kick off this week with the Georgia Bulldogs. And Mason, I'll let you take it away.
All right. So 2-time defending national champs. That kind of speaks for itself. Georgia's kind of building a powerhouse right now. I don't know if you've noticed that. It's a little unfortunate because I don't love Georgia. But look, man, like it's hard to deny what Kirby's got cooking up out there right now. So for me right now, I'm saying their strengths, it's pretty obvious. Their defense going to be awesome again next year. They did lose a couple guys. You lost Jordan Davis, Keely Ringo, Nolan Smith. Like you lose guys like that, it's going to hurt. But the way that they've been recruiting lately, like you can just slide guys in at that point. So their defense is going to be super strong again next year. You still have Brock Bowers. I don't think I really need to expand on that one. And look, Kirby is a strength. That dude has been killing it. So I got to give him the respect too. The interesting thing to me right now about Georgia is I don't feel like they necessarily have any weaknesses. I will say that they have a lot of question marks that could turn into weaknesses, if that makes any sense. The big thing right now is quarterback for them. It seems like Carson Beck's going to be starting. He didn't play at all, or he might have played some garbage time last year, whatever it was. But coming in, replacing Stetson Bennett is unfortunately going to be tough because he was a good quarterback for them last year, even though, you know, maybe you don't like his antics or whatever it is. He did play good. He had them going in the right direction. So quarterback's going to be a big question mark for them. Another one for me is their running game. You lose Kenny McIntosh. He wasn't necessarily their ground and pound guy. Like they have Kendall Milton coming back. He played a decent amount for them last year. But McIntosh was a threat for them out of the backfield. He was a very good receiving back. So how do you replace that along with having a brand new quarterback? Also for them, I don't know where to go with this because they did bring in two really good wide receivers out of the transfer portal in Ra-Ra Thomas and Dominic Lovett. Ra-Ra Thomas played in Mississippi State last year. He was probably their best wide receiver. Dominic Lovett came from Missouri. So you're plucking two guys out of the SEC, and you still have Ladd McConkey. For being honest, that's a strength, man. You have really good receiving options around a brand new quarterback. So to me, it feels like something like that should just slide in perfectly. But man, it's night and day with them right now because you have an awesome team, you have a terrible schedule. So if you look at the schedule, let me pull it up real quick. They really only have, I would give it 2 losable games. And honestly, it's more like 1 losable game, half a losable game, half a losable game. I would say South Carolina could be an interesting game just because South Carolina has some potential to be decent this year, but you're also coming off playing 2 garbage teams right before them. So, and you're at home playing South Carolina. So I would give that a half a chance to be a loss. Then another one, you're playing Auburn at Auburn. I don't think Auburn's going to be very good this year, but it's at Auburn. That's always a difficult place to play at. And then the last really big one is Tennessee, man. Like, honestly, I think that's what it's going to come down to. Tennessee is at Neyland Stadium, which is a crazy place to play, especially when they're playing well. So it'll be interesting to me to see how a brand new quarterback comes in and can replace some of the Stetson Bennett stats, but also just have the team going in the right direction, because that's what Stetson was great at last year, was just being a game manager. Like, I don't feel like he ever did too much. He always did just enough for the rest of the playmakers around him to do the right things. So if Carson Beck can come in and do that, man, they're just going to keep sliding on.
How big of a loss is AD Mitchell transferring to Texas?
So I would have said it was a really big loss, but when you replace him with two other guys, the two guys that I said earlier, Rara Thomas and Dominic Lovett, I really don't think it's that bad, because Rara Thomas last year was one of the better wide receivers in the SEC. The thing is, you can make the argument that that was really just a scheme base, because he was in the air raid with Mississippi State, but I think he is a good wide receiver. So you're replacing the skill set with AD Mitchell and getting two guys back that could honestly equal what he gave, what AD Mitchell put up. And you still have Brock Bowers.
You still have the monster that is Brock Bowers. How many people are going to be tanking their fantasy football to draft Brock Bowers here in the draft next year?
I will say I already have 3 first round picks for it. So thank you, Cameron.
Whatever. Whatever. Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you with the schedule. I mean, if you were to listen to our preview last week, I did talk about Ole Miss being a potential trap game for them. And the reason is because it's right before the Tennessee game when it comes. So that would be maybe a third of a loss or a quarter of a loss. So maybe they have 1 3/4 chance of losable games there. But I mean, listen, everybody has been talking about, I think, this whole offseason on Georgia's schedule being really soft. And I mean, it is for SEC standards. I mean, if you take a step back, and if you're a team in the Big Ten talking about weak schedules, I mean, let's be honest here. You're like, let's look at Michigan's schedule. I mean, I think they have 2 legitimate games that are losable with them, with Penn State and Ohio State this year, which is more than what Georgia can say. But their other games that they should win, that competition is much weaker than going to Jordan-Hare, playing South Carolina, playing Kentucky. The good thing for Georgia is that some of these like mid-tier teams that could trip them up are all at home. Those teams being, you know, South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, and then obviously the Florida game is neutral site. So, I mean, your big games at Auburn because of Voodoo and Jordan-Hare and that stupid stadium, and then at Tennessee obviously is the big one. I mean, that's going to be the game for the SEC East, I think. So what do you think? What's their record, Mason? If you had to guess it now. Just want to know, they were originally supposed to play Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, you always got to add that.
So stupid. Like, listen, I get they're just joining next year, but like, still play the game. I mean,
who was it? They replaced, I think it was, what, Tennessee Martin? Is it Tennessee Martin or Ball State that they replaced them with? This was really hard for me to actually pick their record, because it is very, very, very hard to go undefeated in the SEC.
3 years in a row.
So 3 years in a row. So I actually have them dropping a game. So I have them going 11-1.
Is it an upset or do they lose to Tennessee?
Gosh, man, I don't know. I'll just say Tennessee for right now. I'll go with Tennessee.
Subject to change. Yeah, subject to change.
Yeah. I'll put an asterisk on it.
But how confident would you be if you did say, hey, they go undefeated? How confident would you be in that kind of bet? If you were to bet money on it, they go undefeated the year, how confident is that for you?
I wouldn't feel great about it. That's the thing. Like, I wouldn't feel great about betting money on them going undefeated, but I also don't feel great about betting money on them actually going undefeated or losing a game, whatever. Like either way, both sides of the rope, I don't feel good about it.
Is it just because of the unknown at quarterback? Or what is it?
Well, so for me, it's more of the fact that it's almost impossible to go undefeated 3 straight years. That just feels like a mountain that is insanely difficult to climb. So you're saying that, and then also the fact that there is a new quarterback. Like, to me, there's just got to be a game in there somewhere, man. Like, you had the game with them last year against Missouri where they just played like absolute dog crap and almost lost to Missouri. So, like, I feel like there's going to be a game at some point this season where they drop one. And if they don't, props to Kirby, man.
Is he the GOAT if that happens?
No, God.
All right. Well, that's our Georgia preview. Mason has them going 11-1 and losing somewhere along the road there. next, we're going with the Florida Gators. They had a rough year last year, the Florida Gators, with Billy Napier's first season in Gainesville. It was even a little rough and choppy on the recruiting trail too. So a lot of question marks about old Sunbelt Billy here and how he really fits in the SEC with Florida. They have a pretty tough schedule this year. And we'll go through it real quick. They start off, hey, remember that instant classic game against Utah last year in Gainesville? Well, they get to yes, go sir. To Utah and that buzzsaw this to open up the year. And guess what? It's a Thursday night. So it's basically the first game of the college football season because week zero doesn't count. So, you go to Utah to start off, and then you get a little bit of a break playing McNeese, and then you host Tennessee. Like, can you get a harder schedule the first three games of the season? Oh. I don't know. And then you get another break and play Charlotte. Then you go to Kentucky, then you host Vandy, you go to South Carolina, you have your neutral site game against Georgia, you host Arkansas, you go to LSU, to Missouri, and then you host Florida State to end the year. It's rough. That's a rough schedule. That's a rough schedule. And I'll get a little bit into the schedule once we get down to the prediction. Strengths and weaknesses. Strengths for this team, I think, is very obvious. They're running back. Are their strength with Montrell and with Etienne there at the running back position. They were really solid last year. They're going to be really solid this year. And so that's a for sure strength. That's really, to me, their only for sure strength this season. They have a couple of position groups on the defensive side of the ball that could build into strengths. But clear cut strengths for me is just the running back position for them. Weaknesses, though, are also on the offensive side of the ball and are not going to help out their running backs. And it's going to be their quarterback and their wide receivers. They don't have any wide receivers, really. Who are you going to throw the ball to? And you're having Graham Mertz, I think, as maybe your starter, transfer in from Wisconsin. Don't feel good about it. Don't feel good about it. And then you also lost your best player to the draft in the offensive line last year. Lost another one as a transfer to USC, and I think maybe one other transferred out. So you're really having to patch up an offensive line that last year was a strength of this football team. And now with the attrition, I wouldn't say is a weakness, but definitely is a question mark for them. Defense was pretty good last year. But again, I mean, they just don't really have the depth is the problem. For Florida, they can only win one. They only were able to win games one way last year, and I think it's going to be a lot of the same this year. Question marks: are they going to be able to consistently run the ball and play ball control game, meaning they run the ball, they control clock, they keep their defense off the field? Anytime that they ran the ball for over 210 yards, they basically won the game last year. Because they were able to control the clock. They didn't do that. They lost. It was as simple as that. So it's going to be the same exact blueprint for them to be able to win this year. And with their offensive line not being as good last year as it was last year, I find that really hard to believe that it can consistently happen, especially when you don't have any weapons on the outside and you don't have a freak quarterback in Anthony Richardson being able to bail you out like you did last year. The thing about Richardson is that he had as high of highs as you could get, but then as low as lows as you can get. So I don't know if it's as much as your quarterback being like Superman, but at least being consistent so you know what you're going to get out of him each and every week, because you had no idea what you were going to get from Richardson from series to series even during the season, as he was super, super inconsistent. With that, will the defense be able to improve? They were okay last year. They weren't great. They struggled with, again, their depth. They had some monsters up front, but because they were so big, they tired out quickly. And because of their lack of depth, if they ever got into a scoring game, the odds are they were going to crack down and give up a lot of points and a lot of yards. So can they improve? And then my last real question mark for this team, it to me is more of a question mark for the program, and it's, is Billy over his head? I think we talked about this last year whenever we were talking about Florida and Billy Napier in his first year, and you were a believer, Mason. Are you still a believer now?
No.
Yeah, and no. The schedule does him no favors this year. The recruiting has done, like, the offseason hasn't given him a ton of favors. And it's a hard schedule, man. Is he? I don't know if he's the right fit. And here's the problem with Florida. They Urban Meyer retired, and it's been a revolving door at head coach every 4 to 5 years, it seems. And without there being consistency, I mean, you're just going to keep going through them. I mean, who might be next? This is the problem of hiring a guy at the time Group of Five level that had never done it anywhere else. He did great at Louisiana Lafayette, but it's Louisiana Lafayette, and you know it is what it is. You can get away with some stuff. I mean, everybody talked about his recruiting. Recruiting hasn't been great. I think it's doing a little bit for better this class, but you're going to have some sort of results on the field for your fan base to really get behind you. And with the schedule, it's going to be really, really hard to do that. So let's get into the schedule. I have them down for 5 toss-up games during the season, as well as 5 for sure losses. That's what I have. So I'll go through the for sure losses, in my opinion, on the schedule for them right now. They're for sure losses to me. They are absolutely losing at Utah. There's no way they win that game.
No chance.
I think they for sure lose to Tennessee at home. I think they for sure lose neutral site to Georgia. They for sure lose at LSU. And they for sure lose to Florida State. I think those are no question to me, looking at the schedule this year. And now we go to the toss-up games. And this is where the schedule hurts them more than anything, because 3 of the 5 of these toss-up games are on the road. 3 out of 5. The toss-up games being at Kentucky, Vanderbilt is a toss-up game for this program right now. They lost to him last year. They play Vandy at home. They go to South Carolina. They host Arkansas, and they go to Missouri. So 3 out of those 5 are toss-up games. The only way you go bowling is if you win 4 out of 5.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't see it, man. I don't see it. I think they lose. Looking at the schedule, man, like, it honestly, like, I can't stand Florida, so I really like it when they're down because of the rivalry that we have with them. It's one of those teams you just love, one of those programs you love to hate them in basketball, love to hate them in football, love to hate them and destroy them in Omaha, love it. But seeing my projected record for this team, like, makes me cringe. I have their record. My projection for them is going 4-8.
Oh, God.
With losses to at Utah, they lose to Tennessee. They lose at Kentucky. They lose out South Carolina. They lose to Georgia. They lose at LSU. They lose at Missouri. And they lose to Florida State.
All right. So my big question for you right now is, when does the seat start getting hot for Napier?
After this year, I think.
Do you think it happens in the middle of the season? Like, let's say they do dropped, lose to Vandy again. That point, man, like the seat's going to be real, real
hot. I mean, if they lose to Vandy, like they've already lost to Kentucky. So we're talking about them being 2-4 going to South Carolina if that happens. And with how God, things dude. Took a drastic turn with Dan Mullen, with him the previous year being a thrown shoe away from playing Bama for a playoff spot to almost beating Bama in the SEC championship game anyways, to play spoiler for that, to then the next year falling off the face of the earth, I don't know if that means that, hey, they're just willing to fire anybody at any moment because of circumstance, or if that means because they did that, they'll have to give more time to the next guy. I don't know what it is. And maybe somebody that's more connected to the program might be able to answer that better. But from an outsider standpoint, I don't know how to view that. Like, is it just because you guys are super passionate and you guys will not settle for mediocrity no matter what? And so if that happens, you're gone. Or is it, hey, we just spent money to buy out Dan Mullen because we spent out money to fire all these other guys. We have to be patient with him no matter what happens. You go 4-8, like end of the season, there's got it. Like we're talking Texas A&M, like, hey, you could get fired midseason next year. Like, I don't think it'll happen this year just because it's year two and you have to at least give them 3 years, I think. But
yeah. No, I don't think he'll get fired this season.
His seat, if they go 4-7, I think it'll be just as hot, if not hotter, than Jimbo's for next year.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. But yeah, man, like I just think it's a program problem in totality more than just a Billy Napier problem. Like, it feels like the ADs and all those guys, they probably have, it feels like they have a quick trigger when it comes to coaching. Like, they expect to be towards the top of the SEC every single year. And when they're not, the seat's going to get real hot for any coach there. That's what happened with Mullen, and they fired him. And then the second thing, it feels like Florida as a brand should be higher in the SEC than they are right now. Like, you sitting there saying you think they could be 4-8,
It feels like something you would never say. I mean, let's turn back the clocks 10 years ago to 2013. I mean, they were already kind of on their way down, but they're still Florida. You turn the clocks back 20 years from now, it's 2003, and they win two national championships in the next 10 years. Competing for a third and losing SEC championship game to Bama in 08. So, like, or was it 09? It was 09. So, like,
yeah, I was on it.
And even before that, like, Steve Spurrier had his huge run in the 90s. They had like a little short blimp in the early 2000s and then blew up again. Then we thought maybe another short stint and then kind of blew up and we're starting to build it under Mullen until he fell apart. And now they're back in the desert. Like,
yeah, it just feels, man, it feels gross. Like, just, they were at the top of the mountain.
And it couldn't happen at a worse time. I mean, it's happening like this fall of Florida is happening at the worst time because you have Texas and Oklahoma joining in, which are two major brands, and you're a major brand and you are at the bottom of the East. Like, we're not even talking SEC West. Like, there can be some at least like respectable conversations for coming close to last in the West because the competition is so great over there, but you're in the SEC East and this is what you're doing. Like, you're supposed to be a top dog. And this is also like kind of points to the rise of Georgia. It's because Florida is just in the dumps.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that's one of the big ones, is you're looking at probably your biggest, one of, if not your biggest rivals, just absolutely taken off at this point. And also Tennessee starting to pick up some steam, man. So like, if you're sitting there and you're Florida, and you're flirting with Kentucky in the standings every single year right now.
I mean, Kentucky and Vandy are supposed to be automatic wins on Florida's schedule. And they lost to both of them last year. And I have them losing to at least one of them this year. And for all the Florida fans, I think there's at least one or at least a couple of you listening. The reason I have them losing most of their toss-up games is just for the fact that they're on the road. That's what makes it hard for them. You're at home. I'll give you like a toss-up game, and you're at home against that team. I'll give you the nod. That's why I'm giving you a win against Arkansas, which is a solid win when it comes to programs. That's why I'm giving you the win at Vandy, which should automatic like be an auto win anyways because it's Vanderbilt. But that's why I gave you those two. To me, like, you're just at the same or below level of a Kentucky and South Carolina and Missouri that if there's any edge that I'm going to give them is because you're on the road and they're at home. That's the difference, at least at this point. I mean, you have some solid players, but you're just not at a point where I can comfortably say that you will win most of your road games at this point. I mean, I have them losing every single game on the road this year. Gosh, and it doesn't help that one of them is Utah. I mean, that just doesn't help you at all.
That's another thing, man. Obviously, I don't know every single college football team's schedule right now, but it's really difficult to name two harder out-of-conference games than what they have right now with Utah and Florida State.
I mean, one of the out-of-conference games for South Carolina is Clemson at the end of the year, but their other out-of-conference, North Carolina. It's not comparable this year. It's just not.
No, exactly.
So, I mean, it's rough being a Florida fan right now because one, you add Utah, and then it also comes at the time that Florida. So like you have your Rise of Georgia coming up at the same time. You then schedule Utah with a home and home at the same time that Florida State has been the gutters for the past couple of years. Now they're on the rise and being a national power, all while you are just like going down. It's rough being a Florida fan. If you're a Florida fan, let's hope that I'm wrong. I don't see it at this point. I just don't. So, so let's move on from that catastrophe of a talk. And let's move on to one of my favorite teams, Mason, the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah, okay. Look, I'm a little surprised you gave me South Carolina. I figured with your love affair of South Carolina that you would take them so you could
The reason why bit. I let you have them, Mason, is because I wanted to force you to look into them and hopefully hype them up for me.
All right, well, I'll try my best, okay? All right, so last year, South Carolina struggled to start, and then they come out to finish the season beating Tennessee, ruining their playoff hopes, beating Clemson, ruining their playoff hopes. Absolutely insane finish to the season. So the big thing for them this year is, can you build off what you finished last year? Shane Beamer, another year in the system. Like at this point, he's really starting to build something. Honestly, like I think the biggest strength for them right now can also be their biggest weakness, which to me is Spencer Rattler. Like, he is such a chicken in the egg type of guy right now. Like, he can come out and he can beat Tennessee and he can beat Clemson for you. But also, he can play some of his worst football earlier in the season and just be a dumpster fire. So the big question for me with him is, can you sustain what you finished last year? And if you can, South Carolina is going to have a good year. But I think that's a big one. Juice Wells coming back at wide receiver. He's going to be a very big playmaker for Spencer Rattler on the outside. So if those two can be locked in with each other, that'll be big. You have Trey Knox at tight end, transferred in from Arkansas last year. Last year with Arkansas, he had a solid year, but I felt like he was a little underutilized. So you bring him in, you have him, you just bring in another weapon for Spencer Rattler to potentially get this offense going. The biggest, or I'll say another strength for them is also their DBs. And what's crazy is like you come off of like two straight years of having a first round draft pick at corner, but then you still come back and you still have awesome guys out there. So their pass defense is going to be really good this year. But last year they got gutted up the middle and on the run with the run game. So if they can improve their run defense going into this season, I think they have a really good shot of being solid this year because their offense to me is going to be good because I think you're going to get good Spencer Rattler for most of the year. So if their defense can't keep up with what their offense is going to be doing, they're going to be good this year, man. I can get my hype, Mason. Finally, it took me a
You're
year.
Not hating on me this time.
It took me a year for sure.
It took you a couple years. I've been hyping them up for like the past like 3 years, like I have Texas.
Look, I can always pencil in you saying that South Carolina is going to upset Georgia. So we'll just stick with that. But yeah, man, like honestly, like it all falls on Spencer Rattler this year. If you get good Spencer Rattler, you're going to be good. If you get bad Spencer Rattler, you're going to be bad. Looking at their schedule right now, it's a little difficult. I wouldn't say it's the hardest thing in the world, but they do have some very winnable and losable games. Started off, you got North Carolina. That's kind of a toss-up to me. Then you got Furman. You're going to Georgia. You're playing Mississippi State at home. Then you're going to Tennessee. That's going to be a tough one. Then, like you said, they're playing Florida at home. Then after that, you're going to Missouri. Then you're going to Texas A&M, playing Jacksonville State at home, Vanderbilt at home, Kentucky at home, Clemson at home. So, man, that's four home games in the season. And honestly, right now I have them going 8-4. So my losses would be to Clemson, Tennessee, Georgia. And then I think they will lose one of UNC or Texas A&M.
Texas A&M.
Yeah. It's on the road, man.
But like, hey, saying, they're not going to have Jimbo tough. By that time. Jimbo's gone. It's a dumpster fire.
They could be the reason Jimbo is gone.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule for like kind of like what you said, just looking at their schedule, like it doesn't help having both Tennessee and Georgia on the road and in a 3 week span. And tossing in Mississippi State in the middle of that, which is the hardest team to predict out of the whole conference, I think. So that's kind of tough.
Yeah.
But the end of their schedule sets up perfectly for them. I mean, I'm not super high on A&M, yeah, obviously.
Definitely.
So they could easily finish the season with 6 wins, winning at Missouri, at A&M, Jacksonville State, Vandy, Kentucky. They beat Clemson last year on the road, so who's to say they can't beat Clemson at home? I mean, crazier things have happened. I mean, we didn't think it would happen last year. I'm not calling it. I'm just saying, like, it's just really nice for them to end the year, for them to have another solid end like they did last year. But like you said, I mean, it's all up to Spencer Rattler, and if he can live up to his recruiting hype, then they have really solid pieces on the offensive side of the ball. The big key is, can they stop the run? I mean, that's really what it boils down to, I think, for them. And Georgia is going to test the crap out of that in week 3.
Yeah.
So doesn't help that it's.
But that's the reason I was hating on them a little bit last year, is because like Spencer Rattler was just a shell of himself after getting beat out by Caleb Williams. And he came out and he started off terrible. Like, just got to call a spade at that point. He was not good to start the season, but he picked it up. And he finished off strong last year. And if he carries that into this season, they're going
to
be good.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it boils down to, do we get good Spencer Sanders, and do we have an offense that's innovative and picks it up like they did last year at the end? Or are you going to be conservative? Is Rattler going to not know what to do with himself? And is the defense going to get gutted every single time somebody runs the ball? That's what it's going to come down to. And so it'll be really interesting. But 8-4, I like the guess. I would probably go 8-4 or 9-3 is probably where I'd go. One of those two.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's South Carolina. Let's move on to Kentucky. The Kentucky Wildcats, they had a disappointing year last year. There was a lot of hype for this team of potentially, whenever we talked about them last year, potentially being undefeated and fighting for the SEC East last year, when they had Georgia coming into town. It was really disappointing. Will Levis wasn't great, and part of that was because the offensive line was the worst in the entire conference. They were horrendous and could not protect him. The defense was solid, like it always is under Mark Stoops. But when you don't have an offensive line that can't do anything, it makes the offense super hard. And also, Will Levis just played injured all year, so that they really couldn't get things going on the running game, and he was always hurt in the passing game. So it's an interesting thing now with Levis gone. They get a transfer in at quarterback at Devin Leary, coming from North Carolina State. They don't have the hardest schedule in the world. They play Ball State, Eastern Kentucky, and Akron to start off with. Some powerhouses there. Man, this schedule is great. And then they go to Vandy. So they start off 4-0 pretty easy in September. Then they play Florida. And then they get to go to Athens. They get them earlier this year. They don't have to wait until November to get their shot against Georgia. It's the first week in October. Then they play Missouri at home, and they do get Tennessee at home this year. They have to go to Mississippi State, and they host Bama. Bama rotates on as the West crossover this year, so that does them no favors. Then they finish the season off with two road games at South Carolina and at Louisville. So we're talking about their November being three road games and one game at home, and that game at home is Bama. That's a pretty rough way to end the season for Kentucky. Their strengths this year is just going to be their defense. I mean, their defense is always a strength under Mark Stoops. It doesn't matter who's left or who's coming in. It's always a strength because he's a solid defensive coach. Weaknesses is pretty easy. It's the offensive line again. It's the biggest weakness on this team. They can't block. It doesn't matter what your schedule looks like. It doesn't matter what your pieces around you looks like. They have pretty solid receivers. They have decent running backs. They have a pretty good quarterback, everybody thinks. But if you can't get your offensive line right, then it doesn't really matter. I mean, they had to bring in some transfers from some smaller schools this past offseason to try and shore it up. So it's a big question mark, and I think a weakness for this team. And going into the question marks is the offensive line. Can they protect Devin Leary? I mean, if you can, I think you have a pretty good opportunity to have a pretty decent year. I don't think this is a Kentucky team that's really going to compete for the East like we thought a thought that they would last year, and even that they did 2 years ago. I just don't think they're that caliber team this year. But if they can, you know, stranger things have happened in the East recently. The second question mark I have is, how good is Devin Leary actually? Last year with NC State, that was the pick. A lot of teams were talking, or a lot of people were talking about it as a dark horse, and it was because Devin Leary and possibly being one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. He gets hurt, doesn't play a ton towards the end of the year. NC State doesn't do much, and a lot of people just kind of forgot about him. And a lot of people probably forgot that, oh, he transferred out. He didn't graduate. He transferred out, and he went to Kentucky. So, Mark Stoops is obviously going for hopefully the same route that he took with Will Levis being a transfer from Penn State and hoping that works out with Devin Leary. But how good is he? I don't know. So that's a big question. And then the last question I have for them, I really don't have many questions for the defensive side of the ball because they're always solid. Everything's on the offensive side. The last question I have for them is, will their returning offensive coordinator, which is Liam Cohen, who left for the Rams a couple years ago and just came back, is he going to make a big impact on this offense? I mean, whenever he was there with Will Levis, they were great. They competed for the East. They were pretty solid. Part of that was because the offensive line was good. So kind of pointing back to that. But how big of an impact is he going to make being back? How big of a deal is that? How big of a deal is having a different offensive coordinator last year and what they did offensively and what he's going to do this year? I mean, it's going to be a lot of similar concepts, but is he going to be able to call things at the right time? There's just things that different offensive play callers just bring to the table that you just can't, you know, just put on paper, right? So we'll see what those intangibles look like for them. Predictions. I have them having two for sure losses on the season, for sure loss at Georgia, for sure loss to Bama. I think those are pretty cut and dry to me. Their toss-up games, I have six toss-up games for them this year. Toss-up games against Florida, Missouri, Tennessee. All three of those are at home. And our last three toss-ups are at Mississippi State, at South Carolina, and at Louisville. So with that, I have them going 7-5. With losses to Georgia on the road, they lose to Tennessee. They lose at Mississippi State. They lose to Bama. And I have them losing to South Carolina. So I have them on their toss-up games. I have them going 3-3 on their toss-ups. So again, schedule doesn't really do them any favors with Bama rotating on. If you maybe swap out Bama with maybe Arkansas or Ole Miss or A&M, I would maybe tip it towards an 8-4 season, which is solid. But yeah, Bama on there just makes it real hard. I got them going 7-5.
Yeah, no, I can see that completely, honestly. But to me, like, adding Devin Leary, I think he's a good quarterback. So I think that's going to be an improvement over what Will Levis did last year. But I mean, with Kentucky, man, like, why is Stoops still there right now? If we're being real, like, I feel like I'm a little surprised he hasn't taken another job at this point, just because he's proven himself at Kentucky. I mean, he's a good, like you said, he's a great defensive coach, and they're always going to be solid under him. I just don't know if they're ever going to be able to get over the top. But the problem is, are you ever going to beat Georgia? No, you're probably not going to beat Alabama. And then you have Texas and Oklahoma coming in. So, like, for Kentucky, it always just feels like a really weird spot where, like, maybe we'll upset Georgia this year. Probably not, but we can at least make it a little interesting. So, I just don't know where you go if you're
Kentucky. Yeah, I mean, their Cinderella season was back in 07 where they beat LSU, and I think they beat one or two other teams that year with Charles Woodson. But, I mean, that's just kind of what the program at Tennessee is. You know, a lot of these teams in the East, it seems, is that they're just always going to be middle of the road programs that, hey, we'll have a year where we're really good to maybe compete, but we just never can get over the hump. And that's Kentucky right now. And Mark Stoops has a solid program. He's a solid coach. But I think that's kind of the problem when you're at a place, excuse me, like Kentucky for so long, where you, like, you have a solid program, but you don't ever really do anything to put your team and program over the top for a season to then be the flashy name for a coaching hire. You know, like there's a difference between what Mark Stoops, like, obviously if we have our choice between Mark Stoops and Billy Napier, we're picking Mark Stoops. But the problem is that Mark Stoops is having pretty solid years at Kentucky, but Billy Napier had really good years at Louisiana Lafayette, and he's young. So that's what puts him over the top. So, like, that's just kind of the problem, is that he's just not a sexy name when it comes to the coaching carousel, especially when it comes to fans. Like maybe, you know, athletic directors and the people that do the hiring, maybe they don't care about what's sexy, but a lot of times, like, they do. Like, I mean, in a sense, you don't care, but you do care. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's just one of those weird things, man. Like, he's a solid coach, but I also think that maybe there's not even very many places that he would leave to go to too. I think that's maybe part of it too. But I mean, if you're LSU, when you hire Brian Kelly, the thought was, hey, if we get down to Mark Stoops, it's like, we're all melting. Like, that's what the feeling was like whenever you're a big program like that. And I would imagine that it's probably very similar to people in Gainesville when they were doing their hiring process, and USC would never do that. And I mean, the program that maybe he would go to that made sense was maybe like a Nebraska or a Wisconsin, but they went and got Luke Fickell and Matt Rhule, which we would argue are better options, you know? So.
And I was going to say, like, I was a little surprised his name wasn't popping up more for the Auburn job. But when you're comparing him to Lane Kiffin and Hugh Freeze, it's not really much of a comparison. Like, those two are definitely the sexier names than.
Which, Marshall. I mean, that's not always everything, but it sells tickets. Which at the end of the day, that's a lot of times athletic directors want, is to make sure that you sell tickets. So. All right, so that's Kentucky. We got a little bit left to go here, Mason. Let's go ahead and go with Missouri.
All right,
my ZZOU.
I won't make my last two super long, to be honest with you. Thankfully, you gave me the two worst teams in SEC.
Shots
so
fired.
We'll go from there.
I'm sorry for all of our fans that might listen in Missouri for Mason's disrespect here.
So, unfortunately for Missouri, I feel like the reason that they are going to be popping up in the news and everything is more because of their head coach's ability to keep his name in the newspaper with some of the comments that he makes. Yeah, look, Drinkwitz is awesome. But unfortunately, their play on the field is not going to cooperate with that. Look, they've got a good defense, man, and that's about it. There's question marks all over the field. You probably lost your best wide receiver transferring to Georgia. So now you have question marks at wide receiver. You have question marks at quarterback. I feel like they've never gotten quarterback right in the past, especially under Drinkwitz. Honestly, I don't think I could name you another quarterback since Chase Daniels.
Franklin, that was there when he battled with Cam in the SEC championship game. What was his name?
Yeah, see, you can't even name it. But I mean, look, they got a transfer out of Florida, I believe, Jay Garcia. He was highly ranked coming out of high school, but he hasn't played at all. So it's really just question marks all over the field for them. Their defense is it could be solid again this year. I think they gave up like 23 points a game last year, which is a good number in the SEC. So they'll probably do that again, but their offense is just going to be probably just as bad as it was last year. So pulling up their schedule, I mean, let me see. You start South Dakota and Middle Tennessee. Hopefully you can win both of those. I would assume that you do. But then you have a tough game against Kansas State coming to Missouri. Then you have Memphis, Vandy, LSU, Kentucky, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, and then Arkansas. So breaking that down in my mind, I have them going 4-8. So I have them getting two wins against South Dakota and Middle Tennessee, against Vandy.
And yeah, then
I would probably say, yeah. Okay. No, I have them beating Memphis. That would be the fourth. So
you're saying they're going to lose the rest of it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're saying they're going to lose 7 straight after Vandy?
Oh,
yes, I do actually. Because, I mean, it's LSU. And then you're going to Kentucky, playing South Carolina, going to Georgia, Tennessee at home, Florida at home, Arkansas on the road. So the Florida one will be a little questionable. I seem to be a little tad bit higher on Florida than you are, but if you're at the bottom of the barrel, I'm like, have my nose up at the water. But yeah, like this, it's a tough stretch for a team like Missouri. I don't know if they'll go any better than 5-7, but I would definitely say 4-8.
It's a rough schedule when you have LSU rotating on. And let me just say, as an LSU fan, it feels like we like constantly go to Missouri. Like we've played Missouri, like at Missouri so many times, it feels like recently. And it kind of drives me crazy a little bit. But when you have LSU rotate on and then you add in your out of conference of Kansas State, which is no joke, no slouch. They won the Big 12 last year. And even Memphis has been solid for what feels like the past 10 years, no matter who the coach is. That's not easy either. And then just your gauntlet at the end, man. LSU, Kentucky, South Carolina, Georgia. I mean, having Georgia, Tennessee back to back is tough.
That's tough. That's a tough 5-game stretch just in general. Like even like finishing off against Georgia, Tennessee, but man, that's
tough. You have 2 toss-ups at the end of the year with Florida and Arkansas. Those are tough. But yeah, man. Talking about Missouri quarterbacks real quick. You don't remember Drew Locke? You know who Drew Locke is. You don't remember Blaine Gabbert?
Okay.
You got to remember Blaine Gabbert. And then James Franklin. I mean, he was a beast. Come on.
He was all right. But look, the other two never won anything.
I mean, it's also Missouri. They haven't won anything ever, so.
Missouri, go back to the Big 12, wherever you came from.
Hey, they have at least made the SEC championship game, unlike Ole Miss and A&M.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, Missouri. It is what it is. Let's move on to Tennessee, one of your favorites. I bet you were expecting me to give you Tennessee in this. I thought I would do Tennessee for you. So let's go ahead and talk about the Volunteers, who had a great season last year. One of the best offenses that we've seen recently, super high powered and explosive. Our guy Hendon Hooker was robbed of going to New York for the Heisman last year. Unforgivable, in my opinion. But he gets replaced by Joe Milton, who has like a rocket launcher for an arm. It's unbelievable how he just like I think he has a better arm than Jamarcus Russell. And that's freaking saying something. So it's crazy. So let's talk about their schedule. They open up with a weird game and a neutral site against Virginia. Then they play Austin Peay. Then they go to Florida. Then they have UTSA, which is a solid out-of-conference G5 team, but they're still going to win that game anyways. They have a nice home stretch here of South Carolina and A&M at home. And then you kind of get into a little bit of a road gauntlet. You go to Alabama and to Kentucky. So those can be two tough ones. Then you have like this weird out-of-conference game in November against UConn. Okay. Then you go to Missouri and then finish off with Georgia at home and Vanderbilt at home. So not the toughest schedule in the world. I mean, it sets up pretty nicely. I mean, your back-to-back road games, I mean, one of them is Alabama, but, you know, you follow up with Kentucky, which it could be a letdown game, could be a trap game, but, you know, it's not the most difficult thing in the world. Your rotation from the West, is A&M, which this could be the game that, you know, after this game, A&M gets fired. Jimbo gets fired at A&M. So, you know, it could be fun. Let's talk about their strengths. And they're both on the offensive side of the ball, and it's going to be their wideouts and their running backs. You could say, Cam, they lost Jalin Hyatt and Cedric Tillman to the draft. How can their wide receivers still be a strength? And I have two names for you, Brew McCoy and that squirrel guy. I forgot his last name. I don't remember. I'm obviously not a Tennessee fan to remember all the names. But, those two guys were solid. Brew McCoy was a solid guy for them last year. And then the other guy was a freshman who is super fast. And it's just a strength of their team. I mean, it's always going to be a strength for them with the system that they run is their wide receivers. And then running backs, their two guys are coming back last year that were both 500 plus yard rushers that the thing that people forget, everybody talks about their passing offense, but their running game is really solid. And they returned both of their running backs from last year. So that's going to be a strength for them. On offense. Weakness is going to be their defensive backs. I mean, they were one of the worst teams in pass defense last year. It kind of improved a little bit towards the end of the year until they got scorched by South Carolina. But they stood up strong against Clemson in the bowl game. It's still going to be a question mark. That's really the one area on defense they have to improve is defensive back. Their defensive line is getting better. Their linebackers are still pretty solid. It's just they had to shore up corner and safety for them to really, really have a real chance at winning something this year. So back down to the question marks. My first one is, will Joe Milton be a guy? Is he going to be a dude? Is he going to be a Heisman contender? Because if he is, this team goes to Atlanta. I think it's as simple as that. If he can throw similar numbers or better than what Hendon Hooker did last year, Tennessee is going to Atlanta for sure. I don't care what the defense looks like. You have Georgia at home. That's what you need. I mean, that's what killed him, I think, last year, was playing on the road in a buzzsaw at Georgia. And you get them at home with your crowd and Neyland. I mean, we saw what happened last year. So I think that it's like if he plays up to that level, they're in Atlanta for sure. Is the defense going to take another step in improving? That was a question mark we had for them last year when we did a preview for them. 2 years ago, their defense was horrendous. They needed to improve. They did improve some, especially on third down and pressuring the quarterback. It's still that pass defense that let them down. Can they make another step forward? And if they do, I think that can help with maybe Joe Milton, maybe not putting up the numbers Hendon did, but still being solid. And if their defense takes a step, then I think they'll still be really challenging for the East and heading to Atlanta. So that's another big piece. Will the offensive line fill its holes that it lost? They lost a couple of guys to graduation or to the draft that they have a couple of holes to fill. If those fill up nicely and they have another solid offensive line, then the offense is still going to be just as good. But the offensive line is very important for this offense with their downfield shots. It's going to be important to make sure that Joe Milton is comfortable too. And then my last question is, again, just kind of a program question for them. And it's, will Tennessee be consistent again? Can they be consistent? Can they take what they did last year, kind of what you brought up with South Carolina, can they take what they did last year and build upon it and be consistent? That's been the problem with Tennessee the past 20 years, it feels like, maybe a little less than that, maybe past 15 years, but they just haven't been consistent enough. They might have a good year. And like with Butch Jones, whenever he was there, he had one really good year with some of his miraculous wins that he had, follow up with that with a horrible year, and then he gets canned. So they have to stay consistent. And if they can do that, this program is back where it thinks that it belongs, on the upper brands, being there with Georgia, competing for the East, and soon to be the SEC when Texas and Oklahoma joins in. It's the perfect time to do it. This is the time to make your brand stand out with the expansion coming. And so it's a big year for Josh Heupel in Tennessee. With all that said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no. No, I completely agree. And I think Tennessee's kind of in a good position for them right now, because it feels like they're flirting with being the fourth best team in the SEC completely, and flirting with possibly being the third best. To me, I like how their schedule starts out for them, because you're playing Virginia. Virginia is not necessarily a cakewalk, but it is a good game to start off when you're incorporating a new quarterback and a couple of new wide receivers. And you're also going to be playing Florida early. So you've got four like nice games to get yourself loaded up to go or to play against South Carolina at home. But that's the nice thing is, like, after those four games, it's South Carolina and it's Texas A&M, which are two, I would say, average teams in the SEC, but you're playing them both at home. So at that point, like, that's six games under your belt to get loaded up and get comfortable with Joe Milton under center before you go play Alabama. I'm in on Tennessee this year, but I am interested to see how they're going to build off what happened last year. Like, if Heupel is the real deal and he is a very legit coach, then it's going to be really cool to see where they go from
sure.
what they did
and
last
so
year.
So I have two toss-up games for them, and I think it's pretty obvious. The toss-up games are at Bama and Georgia at home. Those are the two toss-ups. And so with that, Mason, I have them going 11-1 with their sole loss being at Bama. That's what I have for them. And I have them going to the SEC championship game. That's what I have. So that's what I got for Tennessee. I have them 11-1 with a loss at Bama, beating Georgia in November, which I think, honestly, we're all really cheering for. Let's just be honest. Like, we all want that to happen. But I have them going to Atlanta this year.
I want to see Tennessee go on the field when it's not against Alabama, so that way I can actually enjoy it.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. All right, Mason, and now your favorite team to end it is the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Vanderbilt, the Week Zero superstars. All right, look. Vanderbilt. I'm sure Clark Lee is still scratching his head for leaving Notre Dame a year early, because he should be the Notre Dame coach right now, but instead he decided to jump and take the Vanderbilt job, highly touted university. Look, man, AJ Swan, solid quarterback, might be the best quarterback
better than Jordan Rodgers
in Vanderbilt history. You never know. Look, I'm trying to stretch this out here to see what happens. Their defense. Questionable at best. Everything else around AJ Swan, questionable at best. Who knows? Look, they won six games last year. They went to the bowl game last year.
Did they?
I thought they did. I'm pretty sure.
I think they won five.
Or no,
they won their first conference game in like forever.
They won five. Yeah. And they beat their Vegas win total. Okay. So look, coming back this year, can you do it again? Can you beat that record again? My guess, probably not. But I will say, they're going to come out and potentially start off 4-0, and everybody's going to hop on the bandwagon just for them to lose every single game.
You have them going over in the SEC, Mason. You don't have them with repeating wins against Kentucky and Florida this year.
I do not. No. So, look, you're starting off. You're playing Hawaii at home. Week 0. I think you win that one again. Then you're playing Alabama A&M at home. Pretty sure you win that one. Then this one's an interesting one. You're playing Wake Forest on the road. I don't think Wake Forest is going to be any good this year after they lost Sam Hartman. So I think that one's a toss-up. But I think I would give Vandy a nudge. Let him have a little bit of fun. And then you play UNLV on the road. Have at it, Vandy. I don't know why you would do that, but why not? But then after that, freaking Vandy. But then after that is Kentucky at home, Missouri at home, Florida on the road, Georgia at home, Ole Miss on the road, Auburn at home, South Carolina on the road, Tennessee on the road. So with that being said, I have Vandy going 4-8. Tying Missouri.
Can I just say if they end up being 4-0 going into the Kentucky game, how full is that stadium going to be? How hype are they going to be and then sad that they're going to be if they lose that game?
They've got like 2,000 seats in their stadium, maybe. Maybe we'll fill out all 2,000.
Can we just kick them out of the league?
Take Missouri with them.
Listen, I'm okay keeping Missouri. Listen, I'm not as harsh on Missouri as Mason is because they've actually made it to Atlanta 2 times, okay, back-to-back years. So you know what? They get a pass from me. Vanderbilt, no. Listen, let's do conference expansion and just kick Vandy out and let's add UConn. I mean, it's basically the same.
Look, Missouri just feels like the ugly stepbrother that you're just kind of like, I guess I like you, but I don't really want to like you. So go from there.
Oh, Missouri and Vandy. I gave you 2 fun ones on purpose. You're welcome. Yeah, okay, well, so let's finish up this podcast with our order of finish, Mason. What's your order of finish in the conference this year?
All right, I got Georgia repeating and heading to Atlanta. And then after that, I have Tennessee, South Carolina, Kentucky, Florida, Missouri.
Andy. I have Tennessee winning the conference or the division, followed by Georgia, then South Carolina. And this is where we get a little different. I have Missouri next, then Kentucky, then Florida, then Vandy. So a little different there than we were on the West. We were pretty similar on the West. And then once it got to the bottom of the East, you just kind of throw stuff at a dartboard and hope something sticks. All right, guys, that's it for our SEC East preview. Next week, we will get back together and we'll go nationwide on a few teams. We'll talk college football playoff and we have a couple of fun new things for you. So stay tuned for that. So for me and for Mason, we appreciate you guys for listening and we'll catch you on the next one.